Hi, everybody. Thanks for joining us today. Today's guest is Chicago-based Beth Napleton. She's an executive leadership coach, consultant, and the owner and founder of Beth Napleton Consulting. She offers senior leaders in education and at mission-driven organizations a clear path to excellence through individual, executive, and group coaching experiences. Additionally, she offers busy leaders a container and her expertise so they can expand their capacity in all areas. Beth is a national award-winning teacher and has been in the education field for over 20 years, having trained over 1,800 teachers and leaders to success. She is an alumni of Columbia University, building excellent schools and teachers for America. Most recently, she served as founder and CEO of a small charter school network on the south side of Chicago that opened in 2013. Beth took her leadership skills a step further and became a certified Clifton Gallup strength coach so she can offer leaders the opportunity to lean into their own strengths and succeed. Beth completed the National Principal Supervisor Academy at Relay and is former member of the Far South Side Community Action Council. She's a solo parent who lives in Chicago with her three amazing kids. We were so fortunate to have Beth come on and spend a few minutes with us, and we hope you get as much out of it as we got out of talking with her. Enjoy the show.
Welcome to The Peg Doesn't Fit, the podcast that brings you the change makers in education. Tune in to hear from educational leaders who aren't content with the status quo educational model and are blazing their own path.
Everybody, welcome to The Peg Doesn't Fit. Today we got Beth Napleton with us out of Chicagoland. She is of Beth Napleton Consulting, and she's got her own website under the same name. Welcome to the show, Beth.
It's so good to be here. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming on, Beth. We appreciate it.
So our first question is the one we ask every guest. Tell us about your educational journey. How did you get to where you are today? Did you start out as a little baby teacher that always wanted to change the world and evolve into this, or what happened?
That's a great question. Well, somehow it was about 25 years ago, which seems impossible because I feel like I'm 25, but you guys...
You don't look a day older than 25.
Thank you. You know, you're just like, how did I get here? I don't feel like I'm that old, but here I am. And I started as a teacher who really wanted to make a difference, right? I come from a family. I'm actually the oldest of 8 children. And so I found when I went to college, I couldn't wait to leave those children behind. And then within like 2 weeks, I really missed it, right? And I missed being around kids. And so I did a lot of volunteer work in college in New York City, which is where I went to school. And that really opened my eyes to some of the challenges of urban education I had kind of like read about before, but hadn't experienced from my suburban Catholic school upbringing. And so I went in to Teach for America. I want to be a teacher. I want to change the world. And I taught for about 8 years. I taught at 3 schools. And in those 8 years, I had 5 different principals. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was an eye-opening experience in the difference that leadership made in the tenor of a building. You know, my first school, I have 3 principals in 2 years. And it really allowed me to see that even though, you know, virtually all the other factors were the same, the community, the students, most of the teaching staff, the tone from the top really set a difference. And then I worked for a couple of principals at sister schools in a charter network, one in rural North Carolina and one in Gary, Indiana, but they were totally different experiences, despite having the same mission on paper, the same words there. And that really made me think that, hey, I want to stay in education. I've seen a lot of my friends leave the classroom. They've gone on to, frankly, cushier careers. We need their talents here. And leadership makes a real difference. And so I thought, well, if I'm going to keep doing this, I feel like I need to learn to lead and manage adults because I've seen firsthand the impact this has through my experiences. So I went to go run the Teach for America Institute. I ran the Summer Institute. I had 5 full-time staff members, about 100 plus summer staff members. And we kind of created this village where we trained 600 teachers every summer in like a small district. And that was great in Los Angeles. And then I went and started my own charter school on the far south side of Chicago, and we opened our doors in 2013. So when our first class graduated in 2021, we were a 4th through 12th grade school. It was also time for me to move on. But I haven't stopped wanting to change the world. I think I maybe have lost some of my bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, like, everything is possible if we just put our minds to it. It's been a little sobering, but I still think that it's one of the reasons I really like this podcast is because I think there's a lot that's possible in education. And if we can... You know, even tinkering on the edges has massive implications for students and their futures and our country and our world. And so it is just such a exciting profession to be in. So that's kind of how I got here.
We are excited to hear all your refreshing insights. As you were talking, it was also reminding me of, I went to your website and kind of read your about, and you were talking about how, well, I don't want to summarize and mess it up, but basically everybody that I talk to thinks that maybe there's something a little off with education and it needs to change. You know, we always get sucked back into the status quo just because, I don't know, because it's just easier. Change is really hard, but you know, let's get down to the brass tacks. I mean, what are some of the, because kids, they'll change. If we give them a different system, they will adapt. But it's the adults, you know, inside, outside, around the world. I mean, what are some of the adult problems maybe that are getting in the way of us truly being able to make a seismic shift in how education operates?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. It's funny. I was at a family wedding this past weekend, and I was reflecting on, you know, like decades of family weddings gone by. And when I was a teacher, people, how's it going? You're a middle school teacher. Oh my gosh, are the kids driving you crazy? You're a middle school principal. They're like, the kids are the easy part. It's the adults. And whenever I talked to, as I started developing, I went off and started doing some leadership coaching and consulting about 2 years ago in mid-2021. And I started playing with this idea of working on the adult problems that get in the way of student learning. And I have never had a principal, district leader, superintendent, CEO ask me, what do you mean? Right? Because it's like, what is it? It is adult infighting. It is gossip. It is cultures where people avoid conflict. It is people who are really married to their way of doing things and resist change, even if there's a strong movement in a building. And when you think about, you know, how do we help make some of these changes in education that would be so impactful for students? The reality is that to make any changes effective on the student level, you got to work through the adults in your building, right? And I think that most leaders learn at some point, you know, one person can only do so much. I mean, I ran a relatively small school, right, with a couple hundred kids. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm pretty energetic, but I can't, you know, single-handedly make sure that 200 kids every day have this really enriching, holistic educational experience. I need a team of teachers who's also bought into it. I need them to be on board. I need them to say, hey, I'm having a hard time with this. What can I do and how can we get there? And so I think that, and truthfully, you know, and this I think is true in other industries, but I can speak to in no education the best, is that, you know, I liken it, you know, often if you're a teacher and you're interested in leadership, or somebody really sees some potential in you and says, you should think about being a dean or an instructional coach or an assistant principal, it can be really flattering. It comes with often more pay, right? Which is appealing as our bills get bigger, as we get older and maybe start families, et cetera. But it's also like, I liken it to the Olympic diving. It's still diving, but you know, when you're in your classroom with your students, it's like you're training on the 3-meter springboard. And then you get into the assistant principal or dean's office or principal's office, and it's like the 10-meter platform, right? I know how to invest students in an initiative, but how do I invest adults, right? It's right, related, but different, right? I know how to manage conflict between students. How do I manage conflicts between adults? And we don't really systemically, I don't think that the pipeline of preparing people for leadership is particularly good at giving them the tools in their toolbox to navigate leading teams of adults.
Well, parents and the community at large is another part of the equation with adults. I'm curious, with your charter school experience, you know, obviously people come to a charter school because they want something different. They want something better for their child. But did you experience, I mean, and I don't know, I haven't looked at your charter school enough to know kind of how much outside the box you were or how traditional you were or whatnot, but did you find yourself having parents that, even though they signed up their kids for a different experience, they were still kind of wanting the same experience? You know what I mean? Because
Yeah. I think it's a good question. I should start by saying I'm a proponent of great schools that are great for kids, period. And so whatever type, you know, I've worked at district schools. I started at charter school because it was kind of the fastest route from A to B for me, and the vision for the school that I had. But I do think, you know, and we did some stuff that was more innovative and progressive. We did some stuff that was more traditional. But really, so much of my job as a leader was being both really clear on our mission and vision, really clear on what that meant. And then honestly, I felt like a broken record over and over again, right? Like we say that we are about college for all, right? We worked with largely first generation students on the far south side. Well, here's what this means. This means we're not going to let your kid off the hook when, you know, their homework's not done. It's not going to let, you know, we're not going to say, if you say to us in a parent conference, well, I don't really know if he's college material, we're going to say, well, we think he is. We think every kid is college material and can get these letters of acceptance. And it's their choice whether to go to trade school or the military or whatever after, but we can do this, but we have to work together. And so a lot of my work, particularly, I'd say like years 3 through 6 was really, and I work with a lot of leaders in my coaching and consulting now doing this, saying, how do we take those kind of big ideas we have and like distill it into the brass tacks? Like, hey, mom, here's what I need you to do. Hey, community member, here's what I need you to do, right? Here's what this means. Here's what this is. Here's what this is not, right? And let's be really clear on that and help make sure that, and I think it's hard because when you're often trying new ideas, you don't know what it's going to be, right? And so you're kind of learning as you build it, and that can make it hard to then invest your stakeholders in that.
Tell me if this is way too deep in the weeds, but I'm thinking about one of the current changes I'm making and the, I guess, the mindset shifts that happen. Mm. Let a kid off the hook. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking right now, there would be one mindset, which I would call old school, which is, the kid didn't turn in the work, so I'm going to give him an F. That's holding them accountable. To me, that's letting them off the hook because you just gave them a pass to not finish the assignment.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
And then we have me that's like, no, feedback, they still got to do this. Quit telling them it's a zero and that you're moving on, because then that lets them off the hook. Like, is that, I don't even know what my question is. Is that kind of like the brass tacks that you're talking about, is like helping set a vision for here's what this looks like now?
Yeah. I mean, I think number one, I think mindset work is the hardest work, right? Period. Yeah. Full stop. Right. I mean, I'm working with a large urban district now that's on some of their student discipline policy work. And I've been in on these interviews and focus groups. And it's like, at the end of the day, if you want to move the needle on reducing the school to prison pipeline, it is about adult mindsets, which is very complicated when you have 600 schools. Right. And so how do you do that? So I think that one, that's the hardest piece. And I do think that some of that work is, you know, especially, you know, and it's interesting you kind of brought up a grading example, because I found that that's an area that everybody comes with their own baggage, and it is deep, and they believe it, and it is like, it's like questioning their religious beliefs. It's like you don't even want to go there because it just opens up this can of worms. It's like, you know, they say Thanksgiving, like, never talk like religion or politics. It's like, or grading with teachers, like, you know, we moved toward like a mastery based grading system, and oh my God, it was a steep climb uphill because, you know, and so in a lot of ways I'll work with folks. One of the things I do is I call it coach salting. So it's part coaching where it's like, I'm a sounding board for people and listen. And then it's part consulting where I'll build the, you know, professional development plans, we'll role play conversations. I'll kind of do some of the capacity work. I'll assign some articles for summer reading to invest people in these large scale changes, because part of what we often need to do as leaders, even before we're rolling it off to people, is say, okay, well, what do we anticipate as pushback? And then what can we do to get ahead of some of that? So for example, we know that there are going to be teachers who want to give a zero, right? An incomplete assignment, a missing exponent, it's got to be a zero, it's got to be a zero. So is there some research that we can give them that shows them about how a zero basically does nothing? Is it about really like our job is to help students learn, and when we just like, you know, give it a, you know, cross it off in the grade book and move on, we're actually not helping them learn. And so my question as a leader to you is always going to be, how is this helping the student learn? Well, then they're going to say, well, they're learning, they need to do their work or blah, 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 blah. Then you can say, okay, but we're also like, you're a math teacher. Like you are a life teacher, but you're first and foremost a math teacher. And so how are they learning the math? And then we can talk about what they're learning in life as a result of this, right?
Right. And
I think it is just, and a lot of times, you know, and you can never anticipate like 100% of the things people will do, but I do think that sometimes leaders are surprised, or maybe they've anticipated like 20% of what it is, or 50%. And so one of the benefits of having, the experience I have and having worked with lots of different leaders is that I can say, well, and then this came up and this came up and this came up, and we get to like 80%, right? Or 90%. Yeah. And then usually there's just like the hater factor anyway, where people are just going to hate on the idea because they're going to hate on the idea. So we talk about how to like move on from that, right? How to kind of have your armor up and say, hey, we're moving in this direction and here's why, and this is why it's important. And I understand that you're growing and this is uncomfortable for you, but we're going to do this because it's what we need to do for kids. And it's what we need to do to kind of make our school a better place to prepare students for the real world. Right. So, yeah.
Well, and I hate that comparison to compare for the real world, because the bottom line is that, you know, when a teacher gets that email to fill out that IEP report page before the IEP meeting, it's not always done, but they still got a job.
Oh, there's a lot you can do with, hey, so here's your homework, right? You do the IEP meetings, you do this, you do that. And you know, let me just put a number on the board. This is the percentage of people who completed their lesson plans this week. Right. So if the, you know, let's say it's 75%. So did 25% of you lose your jobs this week? You did not. I mean, I go there, right? And it's I do think that sometimes there's a do as I say and not as I do piece. Right, and maybe that's true in all industries, but in education, it's like, hey, we have a responsibility to be models for our students and to have some humility, right? And own that we're all just humans, right? And humans are going to sometimes struggle to turn in assignments, and how do we, you know, structure around that? So, yeah.
Well, we've probably talked about some of these, but what are some of the most common challenges an educational leader needs to unblock in order to reach the success? I mean, because we kind of all know what we need to do and we all know what's in the way, but I mean, what's the priority? What do we need to unblock to help us start moving in the right direction?
Yeah. So I think one thing that comes up a lot for leaders, and particularly as folks are moving from a classroom-based situation. So, I mean, I think the classroom teaching is, one, I think a tremendous place to be a leader and to change the world. And often folks will, you know, move into, okay, well, now you're a part-time instructional coach, part-time teacher. And, you know, as a teacher, your day is so structured. You have a planning period. You have time after school. Here's when first period comes. And then you move into leadership and it's like, well, how am I spending my afternoon as an instructional coach? Should I be observing? Should I be giving feedback? Should I be developing my own pieces? Should I be doing these compliance reports? And so I think that one thing that I work with a lot of leaders on is, where should I be spending time? I often work with principals who want to be more instructionally grounded, but are struggling with how do I clear off some of the other to-dos that are coming on my plate and make time to spend in classrooms, and what's enough? Because, you know, sometimes it feels like it's never enough time, and we kind of work on putting in perspective, how can you lead the school academically while doing, you know, some tools like walkthroughs or, you know, kind of quick observations or whatever that can kind of help you get a pulse of the school and then also take deep dives as needed. So I think there's a lot about where you spend your time. There's a lot on getting clear with what you believe as a leader. This is another place. I'm working with a charter leader in Durham now who just finished a 6 month engagement with me where what we really did was like get clear on like, what do you think is the direction of your school? And he had a safe space to talk. I'm not, you know, it's like Vegas. I always joke our Zooms because nothing, you know, if it happens here, it stays there. You can float ideas without someone from your staff later saying, you know, 6 months later, but you said you were going to do this. It's like, well, that was an idea I had once, but it was, you know, I was trying it out. Right. And so I think that often leaders find themselves, and even in my coaching work, it's like just time to think, like, what do I believe should be true in this situation? What do I think about that zero, right? And why do I think this? And what's my justification? Because, you know, if you're sitting on your, you know, commute home, you've got a million things running through your head. In your office, somebody's always at the door. And so I think those pieces are really things that folks work on. And then there can be a lot with time management, self-care, you know, feeling like you can run the distance, you have enough gas in the tank, which I think is something that, you know, most dedicated professionals struggle with at some point as well.
Yep.
I'm curious, just as an aside, do you primarily work with the leader level within your current work?
Yeah, you know, it can vary somewhat,
obviously everybody's a leader, but.
Yes, yeah. So primarily what I've found is that I picture it like a big game of dominoes. And if you had like a 600 kids school, you have like 600 dominoes of the kids, you've got the, let's say whatever, you know, I don't know, 60 teachers, you've got 10 support staff, you've got parents. And it's like, So I kind of think like, what domino, if I push over, will have the biggest impact? It is usually the principal. Sometimes it's the team, it's the principal and an AP. Sometimes it's like a dean of students. Sometimes it's the superintendent. You know, it's always different. Superintendent, chief academic officer, chief of schools, you name it, the principal manager. But I do tend to work largely with them. And at some point, sometimes people will say, well, I want you to come in and lead this PD. But usually the work we're doing, it has to be the principal delivering it. So I will support them. I will write it. I will do the slides. I'll crunch the data. We'll rehearse it. But there's something about you getting up in front of your team and saying, hey, this is what we're doing. This is why we're doing it. That if you brought me in, it would actually weaken you. And so I do PD. I do PD for groups of principals and for districts and for groups of leaders. But when it's in a school, it usually is working with leadership as that kind of key domino.
So I'm what about teachers? Something fairly controversial, I think, potentially due to the nature of your work, maybe. I think sometimes you said you started a charter school. Mm-hmm. In Kansas, a charter school is underneath. It has to exist within a public school district already. It's not a separate entity. Is that the same where you did it?
It depends. We were part of approved by Chicago Public Schools. So there are. I work with some charters that work directly with the state agency, but most charters, like it's like they work, you know, there's like a layer in between them, like the local district.
Okay. You started something new there that maybe had fewer rules, blah, 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 blah. I think sometimes people would argue, and I'm kind of this mindset now, that potentially the public education behemoth has too much of this stagnant inertia to really impact change. But yet your work is existing, like you're in the public schools helping teachers. So what my question maybe is, like, would you believe that to be true? And or if not, is there something in the middle? But let's say that it's not fully true. You don't have to create something new just to break free. What is the action? Maybe expand on that domino idea of what is, I went away from my controversy maybe, but what is the domino that is the big one that maybe leaders all need to push over together so it feels like making brand new or breaking free of the inertia or the tradition, we want to go back to XYZ.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, I think that change is always happening. Sometimes it's change that we're choosing, and sometimes it's change that's forced upon us, as obviously the COVID times have shown us. I think about when I started teaching, nobody had a cell phone, right? I mean, and so you think about the role of phones in schools now and apps and it's a whole different, in some ways it's like the same, you know, social dynamic issues that were always at play in middle school, but they're like, you know, magnified times 1,000. So that's not fun for anyone, kids, families, or teachers. And I think that, you know, sometimes like I tell people, like, you know, I mentioned this work I'm doing with this large urban district now. And it's like, look, this is like turning around the Titanic. It is a huge operation. The layers of complexity are very difficult. And so, you know, we come in and help them think about how do you pilot it? How do you mirror best practices? How do you work within these large districts to change it? And so, you know, turning around my, you know, middle and high school, very small network, right, was relatively easy. And it still felt like a huge lift at times, right? Because you're working with mindset, you're working with professionals who are often giving a tremendous amount of themselves, right? And then they're burned out and they have their own ideas. And it's hard when everybody, you know, I think most educators, you know, like there's some element of being mission driven in it, right? Like, it's not just like maybe you just fell into it, but like, you can't stick around that long just because you're doing it what your parents did. Like, you're around kids all day, right? Like, if it's not, you learn really quickly if it's for you or not. And so I think that also is a kind of a, like a third rail of all this change is like, it both has like an amazing energy that if you can channel it because people are feeling so passionate and so connected and will go so above and beyond, right? They really feel called to, but also if they disagree, they can be so toxic and so frustrated. I think that change is possible in lots of places and there's lots of ways to do it. And what I see happening, I mean, this is a very broad observation, but I mean, you all know this, I'm sure, right? Like, is like, you know, with all the turnover and talent, with how like mentally stretched and physically stretched people are after just like living through the past few years of COVID it makes it a harder dynamic, like the waters are rougher, to use the boat analogy. And so that can make sometimes leaders afraid of proceeding too quickly or doing things. And so one of the things we'll work on in coaching or in consulting, because sometimes you're right, you should slow down because the waters are rough. But other times it's like, actually though, like 2 miles away, it gets calm. So if we can actually go full steam ahead and we have a clear why as to why we're doing things. I mean, I think that's sometimes the missing piece, is that leaders often know the why, but they don't explain it. And they don't explain it over and over and over again. And I tell people, like, you know that you have done your job as a leader when you start to say, well, we're doing this new curricula because, and people can complete your sentence for you. That is when, and you feel like, oh my God, am I being so repetitive and so ridiculous and so boring? And it's like, but that's your role as a leader, is to kind of say things again and again, right? And so that people know and understand what that is. So it's interesting to, I think that that is something that the water is just choppy now. And that can make it hard for people. And it's lonely. Administration's really lonely, right? Yes. How do I know this is the right thing, right? By the time problems get to your desk, somebody else has dealt. I've got this veteran teacher who's amazing with kids, but who is toxic to our adult culture. How do I address that? This is like a, this, there's no easy answer here, right? And so that's where I think sometimes talking to folks who've been there, and sometimes that's other principals or folks in your district or right, your manager or whoever. But I think that it is, it can be such a lonely and isolating job, and the stakes feel so high given the importance of the work we do, that it can be helpful to say, hey, change happens all over the place in every industry every day. How do I lead change in my school at this time in this particular way?
Well, you've made reference a couple times to missions and what's our why, and you know, we had a guest on last week that, you know, it just, and I've always thought this way, it just kind of clicks when you think about it. So when we're talking about speed and how fast you're moving and whatnot, I think maybe it's more of a matter of specificity, right? Because I don't know about you, I'm sure you've worked with a lot of schools, you've worked with a lot of principals, and you've seen some mission statements that are just like, I mean, you have to have a 12th grade reading level to really comprehend them and unpack them, right? So why do we try to overcomplicate things and make things so wordy when the bottom line is this is our mission. We want students to be able to read X, and we want them, you know, I mean, specify, more specific, and change. You're not maybe going to change the whole world in 1 year, but if you make a pretty big step in 1 year in this particular goal, then that becomes the new norm. And then you add a different one the next year. You know what I'm saying? But those mission statements kind of are embedded, and they always talk about involving community, which they never do, and all kinds of things that just doesn't happen. Well, so I know that was a loaded question, but I will leave it to you.
Well, it's so, Eric, it's so helpful, to hear you say that is true, because I think that we actually overcomplicate in general, right? I think mission statements become obtuse. I find this a lot in strategic plans. People want this perfect plan with 700 tabs and a fancy deck. And it's like, well, if you have a plan that's that great, you're out of energy to implement it. and the reality is that the magic comes in implementation. And so you need a good enough plan, right? I mean, it should be thought through. It's like helpful to say, well, we're doing this in the spring, what will we need to do over the summer and the fall and next winter? But it doesn't need to be perfect, because you don't know where we'll be next winter, right? You don't know what the formative data will show. You don't know what the teacher turnover will look like. But you do know that you'll be able to sit, you know, you can make an appointment for yourself to step back on December 1st for an hour on your calendar and say, how is this going? And what would I change based on my plan? But I think we just let perfect be the enemy of good sometimes. And the reality is that I think what you described is, if we can be more clear, be more simple, which, by the way, is much more compelling, right? I mean, look at every presidential slogan in the book. It's like 7 words or less, right? I mean, it's not like, let me tell you the 7,000 words as to why I should do this. It's like, I can distill it down, complex ideas into simple phrases, and I can use that to motivate and inspire people, and I can take a step, and then we can take another step, and then we can take another step, and you start to build some momentum. And so I think that is, you know, and sometimes leaders will say, well, things are this and my mission, and should I change my mission? It's like, you know, every school, I mean, truly every day, but especially every school year, leaders have an opportunity to say, hey, this year, here's what we're about. we want kids to love reading. We want them to read voraciously. We want them to be, you know, get in trouble for reading during other classes. We want them to have books everywhere and book discussion. And that's our vision, and we're moving towards it. Now let's, what can we do? What ideas do you have? Where are we going? It's reading, 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 reading. And the danger, and I think why some leaders don't do that, is that they think, you know, you got people, what about science? What about math? What about social studies? So you need to be ready with those answers, right? And usually leaders have thought about them, but maybe they're afraid to be unapologetic about them. You know, maybe, but, you know, there, sometimes people are saying, well, if I choose one thing, I'm not choosing the other. Well, you know what? Our time and resources are limited. So you're always not going to choose something, right?
Yep.
And as you alluded to, often it's community involvement, right? Because it's like, hey, I got limited time. So let's just be honest about, we've got limited time and energy, and we're going to double down on this. And here's what this is going to look like. And by the way, if we do that, that might allow us to bring in community. It might allow us to bring in parents, because we're focused not on like the holistic, well-rounded education of the child, but we want kids to love reading. That is what we're doing, right? And here's how we're going to do this, and here's what we're going to do, and I'm just going to beat this drum all day so that they know, oh, yeah, that's what we're about this year. We're about reading. We're about getting kids to love reading, right? Doesn't mean we won't get – maybe we'll do that with math next year. We'll see, right? But here's what we're focused on now. I can't tell the future. That's not my leadership skill set. It's a nobody's leadership skill set. So here's what we're going to focus on for now.
So would you say that's what a teacher could do? Like, if they're lacking that strong leadership, do they maybe pick a theme in their class? Like, I'm an ELA teacher, and we're just going to write sentences like nobody's business this year. That's all I care about. Go for it.
Well, I think the best, I think what I missed most about teaching, what I still miss about teaching, is that, you know, and I know every school is different and every listener probably has a different experience, but really you are in your own little bubble. Like, you create, you have the own ecosystem, and the, you know, when the door is closed, it can really be about the magic that you create. And hopefully when the door is open too, the magic you create with students. And so if you want students to be really fired up about changing the world, right? You can do unit studies on different world changers. You can do, you know, personal. I mean, there's so many different directions that you can go in. And I think for teachers, it's about like, what fires you up? What lights you up inside? What makes you want to do this? Why did you become a teacher, right? Why do you think this is so important? And how do you translate your why into, I think a theme is a great way to do this, right? I remember one year, for a couple of years in a row, I used to have a classroom theme every year. And one year I took a phrase from the I Have a Dream speech, and it was a very, it was, now is the time, right? There's a part of the speech where Dr. King over and over again talks about now is the time too. And then he would insert something, you know, that's kind of more traditionally known. And it's like, now is our time. Now is our time. Now is our time. And that was such a powerful, unifying message. And so I think it can absolutely work with groups of students as well.
Yeah. And I think that can be contagious too. I mean, if you, the teacher next door, if you see all of a sudden, you maybe start seeing all these things hanging on the walls outside their door and the kids are excited and you're like, well, I want some of that. And maybe you can. So I think teachers, sometimes they just feel like, oh my gosh, I'm just working here, you know, and it might not be real pleased with their administrative support or maybe the instructional coaching they get or whatnot, and they just feel beat down. But at the end of the day, we have to remember why we got into the profession. Like, we were talking to Nick Sutton last week, and he's fresh in my mind, but he said, you know, I've never met a student teacher that I talked to at an interview day that talks about how, you know, they can't wait until it's time to retire. And you know, they all come with like this passion and this mm-hmm. desire to ignite learning and change the lives of these people that they're working. At the end of the day, regardless of your mindset, you're still projecting that off into your kids, and you have the ability to make something awesome happen within your own classroom that maybe isn't building wide, but it's still happening within your own classroom. So
totally. And I think that, I mean, I have worked with teachers, will put like inspirational quotes that inspire them, like at eye level, like up above, almost near the ceiling in the back of their room as they make eye contact with it. We'll talk about, integrate that personal why in. So like, I worked with some math teachers when I was a dean of instruction, right? And we talk about like math in the real world and applicable, you know, every Friday they do a thing on, you know, where they saw math and a bulletin board. And I think that it's important that it like taps into that piece that recharges you, and that will kind of help. Then that becomes self-perpetuating, and it does become contagious, and people start to think about, okay, well, how could I do this? Where is this? Because look, there are always going to be challenges. There are always going to be problems in any job in any way. And so how do you say, and this is true of leaders, teachers too, like, what can I control here? What can I control? What can I influence? And how do I focus on that? Because if we focus on the things out of our control, it can feel so defeating. Mm-hmm. And so in some ways, and then we just want to, like, you know, go take a nap. Like, right. You know, I'm all for naps. Don't get me wrong. But you want to be able to crawl out of bed and kind of like keep fighting the good fight the next day. And so how do you make sure you're doing something that kind of feeds you and gets you through some of those tough spots?
Yeah. Well, if we got any listeners that maybe want to get in touch with you, learn more about, you know, you and the services you offer and how you can help, how can they get more information about you and maybe even talk to you?
Absolutely. So you can go to my website, BethNapleton.com, which if you guys can put in the show notes, that'd be great. It's M like Nancy. And I have a bunch of information on there. You can book an introductory call if you're interested in like, hey, I'd love to have some coaching or some consulting or PD. And there's a blog there. There's some video resources. Podcast guest episodes will be up. And I also have a leadership quiz, which will be linked there and also can be found at leadership-quiz.com. And that's kind of what do you need most right now as a leader? It's like a little diagnostic quiz. And so people, that's going live soon, but in our testing, it's been really popular.
Awesome.
So hopefully that's a good spot. And I'm on Instagram too, at Beth Napleton, and LinkedIn and Facebook. So yeah.
No Twitter?
No Twitter. And I know you guys are Twitter guys. It's I never got hooked on it, and I can barely handle the Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn right now. So
right. A lot. Yep.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for coming on. We certainly, we know you're busy, and we appreciate the fact that you were able to dedicate some time to come talk to us. And we hope that our listeners got as much out of it as we did by talking to you.
Oh, thank you guys so much for having me. It was a real treat.
As always, thank you for checking us out at The Peg Doesn't Fit. We appreciate you listening. You can find us on Twitter at The Peg Doesn't Fit. You can find me at Ryan D. Bartle 1.
And my personal Twitter is at Eric J. Steven. You can also email us at thepegdoesn'tfit@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail at anchor.fm/thepegdoesn'tfit.
Drop us a 5-star review on iTunes. Tell your educator friends or family, anybody. We'd love to hear from you.
All right. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next week on The Peg Doesn't Fit.